So welcome to the Savvy Recruitment Consultants podcast. Today is part one of a three-part series that we're doing on the year of SEER, so the Senior Executives Accountability Regime. I'm delighted to be joined by Daniel Lawler today. Daniel is MD of Aquest. He's an ex-regulator and a funds lawyer. And so he's going to give us his perspective on SEER from a regulator's perspective. And the other two parts we'll have from different perspectives. So we're going to run and have a good chat with Daniel on SEER. Hi, Danny. Welcome to the Savvy Recruitment Podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks very much for having me, Jennifer.
Great to be here. Yes. So today we're here to talk about the Senior Executives Accountability Regime, or the proposed regime, because I know we don't have any draft legislation as yet, but we're guessing that it will be probably quarter two this year, obviously with the election again. But the assumption is we'll see something on paper kind of towards the latter half of the year. So we're here to talk about, you know, the regulator perspective. As an ex-regulator, you know, you're a lawyer, you're now in the business in terms of regulatory advice. So you're seeing a lot in terms of firms, what's going on there, what they're struggling with already, maybe from a regulatory perspective. But SEER, from anything I've heard in the it's quite a different piece of regulation. It's a little bit more subjective. Perception is that it's going to hang, you know, a lot of liability on particular individuals at a senior level within regulated firms. So I sense there's quite a bit of trepidation in certain factions around this regulation. So SEER, what's your take on it, or what from an ex-regulator perspective, what's your take on it?
Well, from a regulator's perspective, if firms are and individuals have some trepidation about the the introduction of SEER, that's maybe not a bad thing. Maybe that's already achieved something by simply putting it on the agenda and getting senior executives to focus on it.
True.
And so if you look at why SEER and you step back from it a little bit, I guess as a citizen, having had to bail out the banks effectively and the massive addition to the national debt as a result of the financial crisis, and you add into legislators who represent the citizens and then regulators who try and safeguard stability and protect consumers, and you look at the situation in the financial service industry today and you think, are things better than they were 10 years ago? And you look to other jurisdictions and it seems, perception may not be the reality or not, but certainly seems in other jurisdictions that they're able to get to grips with wrongdoers much more quickly. You see guys, more guys than girls, in chains, led away very, very quickly after there's been some sort of a failure in a financial services institution. And it doesn't take, it seems from the outside anyway, very long to get from something's happened to somebody's accountable, punished and sanctioned for that. Whereas in Ireland, if you look 10 years down the line from the financial crisis, on an individual term, in terms of individuals in credit institutions and others, has anybody suffered for it? Well, not very many. And it doesn't seem to have been the very senior executives. It seems that people in less senior roles that are the ones who kind of carry the can.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a good thing that it would be easier and quicker and possible for regulators, legislators, prosecutors in this jurisdiction to be able to get their hands on senior executives who are accountable and who have done wrong or failed in what they were supposed to do, and to be able to hold them to account for that. So from a regulator's perspective, I think that's how they would view the senior executive accountability regime.
Yeah, and obviously this comes off the back of the culture report on the retail banks in 2018, which is fairly damning, which came out of the outcry around the tracker mortgage scandal. And I suppose it comes back to what you were saying, the fact that we had this tracker mortgage scandal, which was kind of insult to injury on the back of not having seen any individuals in senior positions within many, if maybe one bank, that we saw some individuals, but it wasn't that penal in terms of how they were sort of, I suppose, reprimanded for the scale of what happened.
Yes.
And then, you know, 6-7 years later, you have this kind of tracker. And really from the public perception, there was just going, no, enough is enough. You know what I mean? Okay, because I think we're fairly a compliant sort of nation. Well, we don't tend to, like, we're not like the French or, you know, we don't get up and rally. You know, it takes a lot
to get out
and protest.
It does. But if you think you had the financial crisis, you had the bailout, and you have financial institutions saying, yes, we've learned and we've changed.
Yeah.
And then yet you have the tracker mortgage issue where effectively banks were carried, dragged, kicking and screaming to recompense mortgage holders who'd lost out as a result. And so those two don't marry together. And then you do your cultural review. And on the one hand, you have industry telling regulators and legislators, yes, we've changed, we understand, our culture is better. And on the other hand, you have behaviours, track a mortgage, and the culture review that tell you that's not the case.
Yeah.
So
the proof isn't there.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, as a regulator, I expect if I meet individuals from firms, I expect them to tell me we're best in class, we have a great culture, we always constructively challenge, we always stand up for our consumers. That's a given, because what else are they going to say?
Yeah.
So what I want to know is, what have you done in practice? Show me where you've suffered for your customers. Show me where you put your hand in your pocket. And that might be, yes, we've recompensed on the back of moving people off trackers or whatever it is. But I want evidence that this is what actually happens. I don't just want talk. And then, of course, you had late last year a statement, injudicious, I think is probably a kind way to put it, from a senior executive in an Irish bank about how the central bank was annoying and they should just move on. And
that doesn't... Really clever statement by that individual,
That doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help the central bank, because it firms up their view that things haven't changed enough. Yeah. And if you're the regulator and you're responsible for safeguarding stability and protecting consumers, and you under no circumstances want another crisis and another bailout and another crash, in order to move forward and to be more forward-looking and probably open to newer developments and to be a little bit more agile, you need to be sure that what went wrong in the past isn't going to go wrong again. And a lot of what goes wrong is down to humans and how they behave and how they deal with each other and how they work as a group. And if you think that that hasn't changed, then it's hard for you as the regulator to move on when you're still worried that what went wrong before isn't properly fixed. Yeah. So hence, I think the regulator puts a lot of store into the senior executive accountability regime, and will really want this to be that bit that really drives that behavioural change through making individuals accountable for their actions and for the parts of the business that fall within their scope.
No, I think it will be effective, because again, there is that sense of people sitting up going, oh God, hang on a minute, this is, you know, I'm going to put my name to the bottom of a responsibility statement and a responsibility map is going to be handed over to the CBI. And my name is going to go to the bottom and go, if there's a problem in this area, then I'm the person you come to and I'm the scalp that is lost.
That's it.
As a result. And I think up to this point, because regulations currently focus at the entity level, and there's been so much challenge trying to, you know, get any sort of accountability at an individual level within those banks, that there's shade in the collective, you know what I mean? And I think, not that people go out, I don't think there's many people that would go out to try and do wrong or not do the right thing. I think there's obviously challenge between shareholder value, consumer confidence, you know, kind of acting in the best interests of your customer. But I think it will. I think it will definitely change behaviour. I think it will have the desired result that the central bank are looking for. And we've seen this obviously in other jurisdictions like the UK and Australia, where it has been effective. And overall, I think in retrospect now, a couple of years in, they would say actually it was positive, you know, for the industry as a whole. It made them think about how they operate. You know, it brings a lot of people into a room, not just compliance and risk and HR. It brings every part of an operation in a regulated firm together to actually map this out and understand, do we have gaps? You know, if we're putting, and the individual will make sure that there are no gaps, because they don't want to have their name attached to something that isn't ironclad, that they don't fully understand what they're accountable for, and that they know, okay, you beside me and you and all my peers at the same level have signed up and there are no gaps and I'm not going to pay a cost for you falling foul of your responsibility. So I think there will be more accountability around board tables, because each individual is watching their patch in a way and much more interested in not letting you slack next to them or anybody else.
Well, that's pretty much exactly what the regulator wants to achieve, and the legislators too. So I think this year you're going to see SEER published. The government will change, and I think there's enough momentum behind it that you'll see the legislative changes, and I don't think that the regulator will be far behind with the pieces that they need to put in place so that the regime can commence. I think that they will, if I were the regulator designing this with a blank piece of paper, I'd be putting it at the owner's end of the scale, because of all of the things we've chatted about and statements by CEOs, I, as a regulator, don't think that enough has changed. So I'm going to put it, if I have the option, I'm going to make it harder rather than easier. I'm probably going to want to make the scope broader rather than narrower. I'm going to pretty much want to catch everybody in this regime and leave exemptions to be fairly limited, if any at all. I'm probably not going to want to give a very long transition period, because this has been quite well flagged, albeit we don't know the details. So I'm going to have a fairly short transition period, albeit I'll probably do it on a staggered basis and look at using something like a PRISM approach, where am I most concerned about risks? Well, it's usually in the bigger, more systemically important institutions like banks and insurance undertakings. Yeah. And then maybe I look into other sectors like the asset management sector. That's how I'd approach it. And there's a couple of impacts I would expect as a result of SEER. One is the enforcement side of things. So it will make it easier to hold individuals accountable for wrongdoing or issues that have occurred in financial institutions. And that's a big change, as you said.
Yeah.
And the regulator can look at what's happened in other jurisdictions and see how they have approached the issue. And so they'll be able to design their regime with that knowledge. They're not breaking new ground here.
Yeah.
But that's definitely one thing, that it will be easier to get individuals. And where sanctions occur, you can see it at the moment, say, with the administrative sanctions procedure, and you'll definitely see it in this area as well, should you have a sanction under SEER at some point in the future. It sends a very strong message. Sanctions the individual, but a very strong message to the community to say,
fairly
this is behaviour.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is behaviour that's not acceptable. And you will, and you often see it where there's a sanction on outsourcing, there's a sanction on transaction reporting or whatever. The standards improve very, very quickly amongst other firms because they know the regulators want to look out for it and they do not want to be next in terms of reputational damage and everything that goes along with being sanctioned. So that's an important part to drive up standards because individuals and firms will fear sanction. Because they will be sanctioned and firms will fear sanction. And then I know what you're doing a series of these podcasts. I know you're going to look at it from other perspectives as well. And other
more
views
in-house
of SEER.
Perspective and then people who would do a little bit more consulting around diversity and inclusion, which impacts culture, which is obviously underpinning a lot of what the central bank want to get at, is to improve culture. So as part of this series we're talking to a few, and it's good to get those perspectives because everybody obviously has a different take and can see different angles on it.
Absolutely. And so if I'm a regulator, why I think I am so concerned about things like behavior and culture is I know that as a regulator, I have a certain amount of supervisors. I can't be in every boardroom all the time supervising everything that happens. I have to trust that when I'm not there, individuals and groups of individuals are making the right decisions for the right motives. And that's where culture and behaviour comes in. I really want to avoid unconscious bias. I want to ensure that there's constructive challenge. I want to make sure that there's no groupthink. And if you go back to the financial crisis and you look at things like the Honan report, published in the aftermath, where they talked about things that had gone wrong, it's all over these issues around groupthink. So I really want to avoid that. And so that's where behaviour and culture and diversity all come into play. I think another thing that will be perhaps a more subtle output of SEER, but certainly a very strong and very positive change, will be how individuals mind themselves. So if I'm an individual in a regulated firm, subject to SEER and subject to the fitness and probity regime, I really want to make sure that my personal brand is protected because it's incredibly damaging for me as an individual trying to get a future role, for example, trying to get through a fitness and probity assessment in the future if I've been associated with either individually or collectively in a firm that's had a sanction or done something in terms of wrongdoing. So I really need to protect my brand. So I think now, under SEER, when I have a list of items under an accountability map that are specifically my responsibility, I'm going to need to be very strong to make sure that whatever happens in the rest of business, that my areas are covered and covered very well, because I want to protect the institution, I want to protect the investors, I want to protect my own personal brand.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes to how decisions are made, when it comes to support, for example, if you have a company in Ireland that's a part of a larger group, am I getting the support from Group HQ that I feel I need to make sure my list of items are being covered properly?
And I think that's one of the biggest issues that I would definitely see. Do you see that in terms of like group maybe not supporting the local entity, or they don't feel maybe at a local level that they're getting that level of support?
It varies.
Yeah.
And when I work with firms, inevitably, it's not hard in each individual firm to find something that could be done better.
Yeah.
And in some firms, it's got to do with support from HQ and the Irish business feeling like they're understood in HQ, and that when they have an ask, for example, or when the regulator has an ask of the Irish business and that then passes up the line to HQ, that they're being properly supported. And sometimes they don't get that feeling.
Yeah.
And so for them, things like having external regulatory counsel or legal counsel support that you know, support them and delivering that message.
Independent, yeah, helps, sort of person, helps a lot. Yeah.
But you do see that sometimes. And yeah. I said under SEER, then if I'm individually accountable and it's my personal brand, I have to make sure that the areas that I'm accountable for are being addressed in the way that I'm comfortable with and I can sleep at night. And if I feel that I'm not being supported and that there is a weakness there and a chance of failure, what am I going to do? Well, I got to protect but I got to protect myself.
Yourself, number
and
one,
ultimately,
yeah.
I got to walk away.
And so that's what people have said to me. They've said, okay, well, on that point around, so we already have the fitness and probity regime, obviously. And as part of the overall proposals of which SEER is one, there is a strengthening around the fitness and probity regime. But people have said, why do we need, you know, we already have this individual accountability as a PCF holder. So why do we need SEER to kind of add to that? Because already people in these PCF positions already feel that sense of, and I know people who've left roles because they feel I can't stand over what's been done. I've given my advice in either a head of compliance.
I think they're different though. So fitness and probity obviously is about, are you fit? Do you have the skills and experience to carry out the role? And probity, are you somebody who is proper, who has the right moral composition to carry out the role, who do the right thing in the right at the right time? And that regime is kind of about clearing individuals before they take up a role, that they're fit and proper, and then monitoring on an ongoing basis that they continue to be. But it's not really a sanctioning regime. So what's the sanction?
But if the firm that they are, say, head of compliance for gets fined for, you know, or there's a series of breaches, when that person ultimately goes for another PCF and the pre-approval,
yeah,
they would say, well that's where then I would pay.
There is an element of indirect accountability. Yeah. Where SEER is, it goes beyond that. And it is more, much more direct accountability whilst you are in situ in that role versus if I was to leave the role and I had to tick in a box that I had been involved in an issue in a firm.
And maybe there's a bit of grey there that I could argue wasn't directly my response. Yes. You know what I mean? Or I wasn't directly accountable for it or whatever.
Exactly.
But obviously SEER, it's pretty penal. It's you as an individual and the firm is collectively identifying those individuals. So the CBI, this is not on the CBI to go in and identify. You're going to have to self-identify and sign
up. It never is on the CBI.
So it's very simple for them.
Yeah. You know, but if you look at fitness and probity, you know, it's up to the firm to check and confirm the fitness and probity of the individuals. And then they're sent to the regulator if it's a pre-approved control function for pre-clearance by the central bank. Central Bank will never turn around. You know, if an issue arises with that individual and say, yes, we got it wrong, we pre-cleared them and we shouldn't have, that's not the Central Bank's role. They'll never do that. It's up to the firm. And if something goes wrong, it's the firm's obligation, notwithstanding that the Central Bank has pre-cleared them. So it's never really a shield to an action.
Yeah.
If something goes wrong, regulator, notwithstanding any pre-clearance, will still, if the circumstance arose, will still look to the firm to sanction if it came to that.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, from my take and what I see, I think the firms that will have the biggest issue around the implementation of SEER, and not for just the implementation of it, but actually to attract and retain very senior people in the positions covered by SEER, are the retail banks. Because the perception is there are so many legacy issues. Okay, we're what, 10, 11 years post-crisis, but in any of the domestic banks, there are still massive legacy issues that they're working through. They're all swarmed with consultants that are all advising them, but they're going through remediation. You know, there's so much going on that if I was an individual who was offered a CFO position or a very senior position covered by the new regime in a retail bank, I think they're going to be the most difficult roles to fill in a post-SEER environment, as opposed to kind of an asset manager or an insurance company where there isn't necessarily, I think it's the legacy issues that would scare an individual, because they, how do they know? How can they go into the role knowing enough, having not been there?
Yeah. So then from a regulator's perspective, is that a good or a bad thing? Well, I guess it depends. Mm. If it comes to the point that nobody will take on those roles,
that's
not a good thing.
No.
But if the balance falls at people who take on these roles take them on knowing what they're signing up to, and they take them on in all seriousness and committed to doing a good job, well then SEER has worked. Without ever sanctioning anybody, SEER has worked, because you've got very good, committed, serious people doing very important jobs.
And do you think the Central Bank will take that into account? You know, say, for example, somebody takes up a role, they have acted very properly in that role, they've very proactively gone after, you know, making sure that they're very, but there's some legacy issue that arises that for whatever reason hasn't been identified before, kind of mushroomed under the radar, and now it's exploded on their tenure in that particular role. Do you think the CBI will take that, you know, in
I think they will. I think they'll take into account how the individual has behaved since they came into the role.
Yeah, because I think for those individuals, I can appreciate that. And as you say, I don't think this regime in those instances will succeed if nobody will go into those roles. And they have enough challenge around salary caps and everything already. So you want good people in those roles. You want the best people.
Absolutely.
You can get.
But sometimes you will hear cry from industry that, you know, nobody's going to take on these roles. There's nobody left. And if the bar is too high, nobody will take them on. And now the regulator is creating systemic risk by having roles that can't be fulfilled because
too hot
the bar
to touch.
Is
too high. Yeah.
Now, I've heard it. I've never seen it in practice. So it's always felt to me like a cry wolf because roles are filled and roles are filled by people who clear fitness and probity. So it might be an issue in theory, but I haven't seen it being an issue in practice. And so if I were the regulator, I'd really need a very strong case proved to me that that is actually what happens in practice. Because otherwise, to be frank, I don't really believe that it's going to happen.
Okay. Interesting. Well, let's see. We'll look at
that. Let us see.
And I suppose, Danny, just to conclude, and you know, if there were three things that you would say to either firms or senior execs that are going to be covered by this regime that are listening to this, what are your pointers? What are your three things to say, look, this is what you should probably start doing today?
Okay. Well, the first thing is to appreciate that this is a big deal. And it is a big deal on an individual and personal level. So if you are senior leadership or your HQ, support your local management because they will need it. Don't leave them to flounder about on their own and feel like they're being cut adrift or they're being left to do this on their own, because it is a big deal and nobody, God forbid, wants to be hauled in chains to be held accountable for something and sanctioned in the severest manner for something going wrong in the firm. So it is a big deal. Support your individuals. There probably won't be a massive transition period, and we don't know the details of the regime yet. But it's been flagged well enough. This is number two, Jen. It's
keep
been
track,
flagged
keep
well
tracks.
Enough that we know it's going to come. So act quickly when the details are published. Don't leave it till the last minute, because for a few reasons, it's going to be hard to do a good job if you do leave it till the last minute.
Yes.
But also, it's going to be hard to convince your management team that you're supporting them if you've left it till the last minute. So support your management team. Get ahead of it. And really commit resources to this one. You know, this isn't one to just do the minimum on. This is one to go above and beyond and make sure that you're best in class on this with best practices, and that you've taken time to understand what's required and to apply the obligations properly and support your team as they go through it, which would be everything from, you know, if they call, for example, we work with individuals getting called in for fitness and probity interviews or PRISM interviews. Support them. Make sure that they get a dry run on that. Don't let them go in with one arm as long as the other, thinking it's going to be, they're going in for a chat and it's going to be nice and easy, and then come out realizing that it's absolutely not that.
And so a lot of firms do leave individuals to cope with that on their own currently, would be my, from what I've seen.
They do. Yeah. And what's the outcome of that? Poor performance in the interview, and then they return to the office and feel disappointed, I'm putting that mildly, that they haven't been supported by the organisation. And that disappointment filters out amongst the staff, around the water cooler or wherever else. That gets out, and that seeps into culture, and it seeps into the morale around the office.
Yeah.
So,
because I know it was certain, and we'll kind of conclude on this, but I know that there are certain individuals who've been called in as part of a legacy review in a certain industry, and they've got no support internally. It's the first time to meet the Central Bank of Ireland. It wasn't necessarily on their watch, and they have felt so vulnerable, so isolated, and really disappointed that the firm is sort of taking a view of going, oh, well, you know.
Well, you're teeing me up very nicely to talk about the FNB Masterclass, which we're releasing through Funds Academy online this month. But this is your podcast, so I'm not going to shamelessly plug.
No, it's okay. You can shamelessly plug. But another thing we have to plug is we have an event coming up at the end of February, on the 26th of February. So if you're interested and you're listening to this and you're interested in hearing more from Danny's perspective, we also have Mark Fenton. We have Ger Mitchell from PTSB to discuss SEER and the year of SEER and what it means for firms and individuals and get all the different perspectives. So if you haven't already, you can go to savvyrecruitment.com and RSVP for the event. We've limited spaces, so best to do that as soon as you can. So that's the 26th of February in WeWork Charlemont Exchange. So look, thank you very much, Danny, for your time. That was great.
Thanks
very insightful.
Much,
cheers.
Savvy Recruitment Consultants are an executive search firm operating within the financial services industry in Dublin, Frankfurt and Luxembourg. For more information on us, please go to our website, www.savvyrecruitment.com. If you would like to contact me directly, you can email me on jennifer@savvyrecruitment.com.